It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Lawmakers are now in the final stretch of the regular legislative session in Charleston. That means focus is shifting to the budget.
And we've got so many needs, whether it's with seniors, whether it's with public employees, whether it's helping foster children, and so many needs in West Virginia and just not enough revenue to keep up with it all.
We'll touch base with state senators on that subject in just a few moments. This is West Virginia Morning. Governor Jim Justice signed into law a controversial bill that would force doctors to use reasonable medical judgment in the event of an unsuccessful abortion. As Dave Mistich reports, federal lawmakers rejected a similar piece of legislation last week.
Governor Justice held a ceremonial bill signing Monday. He was surrounded by fellow Republicans, as well as those from an anti-abortion rights group who has endorsed him for re-election.
I stand for life in all cases, all the time.
Under the law, the state medical board could revoke a doctor's license if they fail to provide medical care as they would for a fetus of the same gestational age. Democrats in the state legislature called the bill an election year stunt that attempts to address a problem that doesn't exist. Still yet, many of those in the minority party voted in favor of the measure. Republicans painted a picture in which a fetus would be clinging to life and could survive with proper care. West Virginia currently bans abortions after 20 weeks of gestation. The state's lone abortion provider self-imposes a ban at 16 weeks. But a fetus is generally not considered viable until 23 weeks. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich at the Capitol.
As coronavirus continues to spread in the United States, people are starting to wonder, how at risk am I? Health reporter Carol Lofton spoke with Dr. Jennifer Horney, an epidemiologist at the University of Delaware, about what we know about coronavirus so far and what we might be able to expect.
So how big of a deal is coronavirus? Who exactly is at risk for contracting this disease?
So what we're seeing is a global spread of a relatively novel virus, although it is related to other viruses that we've seen in the past, like SARS. It seems that it's not very serious among people under about age 70. The mortality rates are very high in older adults, up to 8 or 9 people in one out of 100 infected. And we're seeing much lower rates in younger people.
So I've seen a lot of comparisons to the flu. Are they comparable in terms of risk to the average person?
I think that the comparison lies in the fact that we tend to be very bad at risk perception. So every year we tend to have around 30,000 deaths in the United States from seasonal flu. And we don't have vaccination rates that are that great. And so I think that the comparison to the flu has been that we have the flu every year. We have over 100 million cases usually. We have a number of people who are at high risk, including children and the elderly and people with compromised immune systems. And we don't see the kind of attention paid to the flu on a typical year that we're seeing to coronavirus.
So I've seen the word pandemic kind of thrown around, and that sounds scary. Should people be scared?
I think that there are a couple of things that people should be concerned about. We definitely need to increase our testing capacity. We need all our state public health labs across the country to be able to rapidly and accurately test patients who are suspected to have been infected. We need other countries around the world to have the resources to be able to accurately report. And we need appropriate science-based information from the media, from the government, from academic researchers. And I think all of those things will basically point us in the right direction. I think what we don't need, if we're just an average person, not planning on traveling, we don't need masks or gloves. We'll save those for the healthcare workers, for people with compromised immune systems who may need them. And I think one of the more likely outcomes of people going and buying things like masks and gloves is that they're actually not trained to use them. They're not being able to have the mask fitted. And so they're probably wasting their money on something that's not going to be effective at preventing transmission of coronavirus in the very unlikely event that they should be exposed to someone who's infected.
there's a lot to unpack there, but I want to talk about the last statement you said, the very unlikely possibility of being exposed to somebody. I mean, in a place like West Virginia that doesn't actually have an international airport, I mean, how at risk are people in West Virginia specifically?
I think the risk there is very low. The cases that we are seeing in the U.S. have been associated with, again, with people with close contact with someone with a travel history. And we have that, are starting to see cases without a travel history, but those are predominantly in large cities. So I really don't think that it's a great risk. And as many people have been saying, the basic precautions like washing your hands and staying home when you're sick are the best to follow. At this point, seasonal influenza remains a much bigger threat in the U.S. than coronavirus.
Considering that, do local health departments, do state health departments in places like West Virginia need to take specific actions to prepare for this in the event that it does spread more widely than places where there's lots of travel?
Public health, I think, at the local, state, and federal level have been preparing for some time for coronavirus and the potential for it to spread in the U.S. And we have to remember that we've made a tremendous investment in our public health system since September 11th and the subsequent anthrax attacks. So we've had a lot of practice responding to avian influenza, pandemic influenza, SARS, Ebola. So people are ready. I know state health departments are having weekly or even daily calls with their partners in hospitals and other health facilities that would need to be aware if something were going to happen. But I think we're ready. It will just be a matter of having to ramp up the response once those cases do start to increase.
You know, for people listening to this, I mean, is there a takeaway? I mean, it sounds like people really don't need to be that concerned and that it could be more hyped up than there actual risk.
Yes, I think there are a lot of things to be more concerned about right now. Certainly keep an eye on the news and use scientifically valid information sources like the Centers for Disease Control or your state health department. Look to them. They'll be publishing updated guidance. There's so much information available. I think it can be difficult to know what the most accurate and up-to-date information is, but use those sources of news that have experts that are providing the information and try to stay off of social media if you can.
That was epidemiologist Dr. Jennifer Horney speaking with health reporter Carol Lofton about coronavirus. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Charleston Area Medical Center and Marshall Health. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:52. Rain with gusty wind today, possibly thunderstorms, highs in the 50s and low 60s. Chance of rain tonight with lows in the 30s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and breezy with highs in the 50s and low 60s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Jaeger Airport CRW. Now with flights to Orlando, Florida MCO. More at JaegerAirport.com. WV511 is reporting a vehicle crash in Cabell County, westbound I-64, mile marker 9 near Huntington. Over the weekend, the West Virginia Senate passed its version of the budget bill. The bill will be on the second reading or the amendment stage in the House of Delegates later this morning. On last night's episode of the Legislature Today, senior reporter Dave Mistich sat down with Senate Finance Committee Chairman Craig Blair and Committee Minority Member Senator William Ehlenfeld for an overview and breakdown of the Senate's budget bill, as well as revenue projections for the state as a whole. Here's an excerpt from the interview taped live at the Capitol.
Senator Uhlenfeld, what's your take on the current budget picture? The revenue numbers, like I said, $19 million deficit 7 months into this year. What's your take on things?
Well, I agree with Senator Blair. I wish it was looking a little bit better than it does right now. And looking forward, looking to the out years, the next 5 years or so, things look to be somewhat gloomy when it comes to the budget in West Virginia. And we've got so many needs, whether it's with seniors, whether it's with public employees, whether it's helping foster children, and so many needs in West Virginia, and just not enough revenue to keep up with it all. And he's right. We have a roller coaster, and that severance tax is a big part of it. I wish things were brighter. We've got a lot of work to do, but he has a great staff. Senator Blair has a great staff. They work very hard behind the scenes to make all of the numbers work, and we have to work with what we've got, and hopefully someday that picture will become a little bit brighter.
Right. And you mentioned the out years. There's been some concern, not just this upcoming fiscal year, this current fiscal year, the upcoming fiscal year, but years down the road, that we're talking about bigger and bigger deficits as things roll along. Looking into the future, what are you seeing, Chairman Blair?
Well, it's hard to predict that. I don't pay too much attention to these six-year numbers out into the future. Numbers can be manipulated, and they get manipulated. You know, when we had last year, when we had the almost $500 million in extra revenue, well, that's we didn't come in with that prediction of that happening. It comes back to the severance tax roller coaster. If you got coal and natural gas and oil where those numbers are up, we pull in a larger number on that. When you've got the two natural gas pipelines that are in the court system right now, rather than working or being built, that hurts the numbers through the employment side and also the sales tax collection, because lots of times there's people that are living in hotels or campers and they're spending money in the state of West Virginia. But when they're gone, gas can be actually moving through those pipelines, and that gives us an opportunity for greater sales tax collections as well. So I'm an advocate. I want these two gas lines in operation. And then when you look at all our abilities to get gas out of this state, we're coming up to where we're hitting the ceiling on that. We need to put in place the ability to have businesses that utilize that and make an end product for the petrochemical industry on that, because otherwise we're not going to be able to get gas in the drilling in this state, which has really slowed down to begin with, will get even slower from that standpoint. So we got to be able to utilize the resources that we have.
I understand that, you know, the past couple of years you've got a budget done in 60 days. I understand that that's been your mission year after year. Are we in shape to get that done? Obviously, we're probably going to see a conference committee with this like we do every year, of course.
Yeah, there will be the ability to have a conference committee. I always set it up and try to get the committee chairs to work with the finance committee to get the stuff in time so that we can work through the budget early and get done before the 60-day session ends. But make no mistake about it, that I won't compromise the Senate positions on some things. And if we got to go to day 61, 62, 63, so be it. But that is not the goal. The goal is to get it done in the 60-day session, and I think we'll get there.
Given that idea of trying to get done in 60 days, but also looking, you know, into the future, what's, very quickly, your priorities coming into these budget talks, you know, towards the end of the session?
Well, we want to get it done in 60 days, too, talking about being efficient with taxpayer dollars. We don't want to spend extra days here in Charleston. That costs taxpayer money. So we want to get it done, and I think we can. I think we're to the point right now where we're very close to getting it all accomplished, and we should be able to do it in 60 days. I hope we can.
Right. Any top priorities as this winds down?
Well, I mean, some things that we're not going to be able to do this year, but hopefully going forward, including a cost of living adjustment for our retirees. They have been working on that same nickel for the past 20 years. We need to increase that money, and we're not going to do it this year, but I hope we can do that in the future.
Great. Senator William Uhlenfeld of Ohio County, Senator Craig Blair, Chairman of the Senate Finance Committee of Berkeley County. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
Mountaineer Challenge Academy. Before we hang up, Mountaineer Challenge Academy is something I think we both agree on. On this, the second one of those is a necessity, and that's one of the things that I'll hold the line on for this budget.
We'll keep that in mind.
Thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, Dave.
That was Senator William Uhlenfeld, a Democrat from Ohio County, and Senate Finance Chairman Craig Blair, a Republican from Berkeley County, speaking with Dave Mistich on the legislature today. To hear the full interview, visit our website at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director and producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.